Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe. This is episode number 29, if my math is correct, and I'm Pete Shambo. I'm joined tonight by Paul Wilson and Gene Myers. Hi, guys.
Hey there, Pete.
You may have noticed that Gene's sounds a little further away than normal. He's in an undisclosed location getting ready to go on a quail hunt with some noted luminaries in the world. Isn't that right, Gene?
Well, I'm going to be sure to wear bulletproof armor from head to toe. If Deadeye Dick is going to be among the hunting party here, then you better believe it.
Okay, that's enough of that. So we have a topic tonight, and we thought it'd be a very interesting one. We're going to do something a little different. We're actually going to have a focus that we're going to talk about. All three of us do traditional martial arts, or we'll say TMA. And you know, there's a lot of controversy. You have people saying that there's no sense in doing TMA, or you know, anyways on the boards, on the internet, there's a lot of talk about traditional martial arts, whether they're good at all, or you know, whose is better or whatnot. So that's basically what we're going to talk about tonight, and we're probably going to extend this to a few episodes because there seems to be a lot of interest in it.
So, let's start, I think, with just a brief identification of which arts are traditional, identified as traditional, and what makes them, you know, traditional, period. Paul, why don't you start?
Well, I think that what makes a martial art traditional is one that has a verifiable history, and a sense of itself. You know, it's one that doesn't try and be all things to all people. It is what it is. It doesn't, like Shaolin Ryu is Shaolin Ryu. You know, it's got punches, it's got kicks, it's got, you know, kobudo, it's got kata. It's kind of an inclusive art, but it has enough of a history and has had enough of a format, if you will, to essentially stand on its own and stand out from any particular art that it is.
So some examples of traditional arts would be, as you mentioned, Paul, Shorin Ryu karate, Goju Ryu karate, and other Okinawan styles, some Kung Fu and some other Chinese styles, right? Some of the Korean styles like Taekwondo, Tangsudo, things like that. These would all be considered traditional styles. Am I right?
Yeah, I'd say so. And maybe even some of the Philippine. I'm not too familiar with them, but some of the Philippine arts seem to have a lineage.
Well, there are even like Indonesian styles, the Savat in France. There are Western arts as well. Fencing, you know, fencing can be considered a traditional martial art. I think people, when they think traditional martial arts, they think essentially Japanese arts because they are more codified, I guess. I mean, you know, you see Aikido. Aikido is relatively new in relation to, say, karate. Karate goes farther back if you kind of look at it. If you look at the roots of any martial art, you know, you can kind of follow them back. And I think if, you know, anything is more than, say, you know, 50 or 60 years old, it kind of starts moving into that traditional realm.
Mm-hmm. One could even say, just as a footnote, that things like wrestling and boxing could be considered a martial art, at least in my opinion. I mean, boxing was practiced in ancient Greece, as was wrestling, and something else called pancration that was done in the ancient Olympic Games. So there's some lineage there, some history there too.
Well,
but I agree with you that most martial artists consider traditional martial arts to be the Southeast Asia, Okinawan, Japanese variety. Would you guys agree?
Yes.
Yes. But again, I think that we're making a good point when we say that there are many arts that are old. Some are even older than, you know, Shaolin Ryu. But people don't think of them as such.
Yeah. So if these are examples of traditional martial arts, what would be considered a non-traditional or maybe a modern martial art?
It's like art. I'm not sure what it is, but you know it when you see it.
Well, I got some examples. How about Jeet Kune Do? Okay.
Okay.
As everyone knows, Jeet Kune Do was the style that was developed by Bruce Lee, who was extensively trained in Wing Chun and a variety of other Chinese arts. And
a cha-cha dancer.
And a cha-cha dancer, you know. And who knows how much of, you know, all of these different arts, performance and otherwise, martial otherwise, so were included in Jeet Kune Do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
I was just going to say, Jeet Kune Do has its roots in the 60s, mm-hmm. you know, from the 1960s, and it's still, even though it's going on 50 years old now, still, for comparison, it's still a relatively newer and modern martial art.
Well, you know what I would think, that a lot of the Jeet Kune Do stylists, I mean, even, you know, Bruce Lee didn't say it wasn't a style, it was a concept. And I think that he was really, and I've read it before, they say that Bruce Lee was the first mixed martial artist. And he was. He took a lot of arts and he used what he thought would work for him, and he blew off everything else, and that's what essentially what he would tell whoever he was teaching. Use whatever is good and throw away everything else. And that's kind of, I think, he was the tipping point of going from traditional martial arts to where we are today.
But
well, that's true. His system, like you say, concept is more eclectic, because he took concepts, techniques from a variety of different arts that he studied and observed, and developed, you know, Jeet Kune Do, but still, I mean, I think people would agree that it's a relatively new, you know, if you want to call it an art or if you want to call it a concept or a system, whatever.
But it's new, but a lot of his stuff, or I think probably all of it, is still based on traditional style, as opposed to some of the what I consider modern arts today that have moves that you'll never see in a traditional style.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's, you know, one of the points that we wanted to talk about was an eclectic art. Jeet Kune Do could be called an eclectic art, although a lot of their proponents say it's not an art, it's not a style, it's a concept, it's, you know, a way of thinking. You know, and a lot of the styles that want to say they're traditional styles, it's, you know, amalgamum of, you know, I think I've discussed this before on the board, was, you know, there's nothing really new under the sun as far as martial art goes by this point. You know, there may be different ways of teaching it. There may be a different, you know, a mixture of putting them together. But I think a punch and a kick and a punch and a kick and, you know, and a throw and a you know, a finger lock and, you know, that kind of, I don't think there's really going to be anything new found. And so maybe for me, that's where the traditional martial art jumps off is, you know, if someone like, you know, like Ed Parker took what he learned, tweaked it a little bit, and, you know, kind of founded his own style. Now it's can almost be considered a traditional martial art because it's been around for a while, but it's really just other stuff that he learned and the concepts that he improved on.
And a lot of these, well, okay, you mentioned Ed Parker with the American Kempo. We talked about Bruce Lee with Jeet Kune Do, and you can think of different modern arts like Krav Maga from Israel, you know, for example. These are all self-defense, and again, I hesitate to use the word systems, but to me they are. You know, you don't see Jeet Kune Do tournaments, you know, or Krav Maga tournaments, you know, as you might with more traditional arts. And you know, I guess that's just the way, you know, things are, you know, now with the emphasis on reality-based type training. I don't know. What do you guys think of?
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The way, I don't know, thinking about this, I did what I typically do with these podcasts, and I'm shooting from the hip. I did as little research as possible. But thinking about the non-traditional arts, they seem to be the ones that always have the tournaments to me. I mean, what you were saying that, well, the Israeli art is really meant for self-defense. I mean, that's what Israel is all about, and that's what that, I can't even pronounce that style, but that's what, it's meant for self-defense, and it's used a lot in their military and their service, secret services. But it seems to me like the MMA, all the MMA tournaments, it seems to me like, although there are tournaments in traditional martial arts, it seems to me that the non-traditional arts, that's more of like an ends to why you study, is so that you can fight in a tournament of one description or another.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are definitely sport-oriented martial arts. Take judo, for example, and taekwondo has become, although that's an effective self-defense system, it typically more now is thought of as a sport competition, you know, martial art. But these are also arts that can be used in self-defense as well, you know. So, I mean, you can take, and, you know, maybe that might be, well, I guess where we're going is, how come there's such a rap on traditional martial arts? And Pete mentioned the mixed martial arts, you know, or the MMA. They're just an eclectic form of, like, cross-training martial arts, and I mean no disrespect by that. These guys are tough as nails, to be sure, you know. Yeah. But there's no traditional, you know, fighting system, you know, that can call itself a mixed martial art. I think it's just that, Paul was saying, an amalgam of different styles, you know, pulled together to form a fighting system that would help you based on your body type and your physical strengths and skills in, you know, in a ring or in an octagon or wherever they fight.
Yeah, I think that with the mixed martial arts, what that term really more means was it was really more from a competition angle for the whole UFC. You know, they call it mixed martial arts because they had grappling in there. They had, you know, punching and kicking, you know, and then essentially any style could come, you know, play in the reindeer games. But, you know, I was reading, I sent you guys a link to an article that was, someone was essentially saying, it was on Bullshito, and he got flamed immediately for putting this out, but he's saying that mixed martial arts is kind of a traditional martial art now, from the standpoint that, like, you know, if you go to a mixed martial arts school, you know, which essentially is just a training ground to go, you know, to like the UFC or you know, no holds barred matches in general. What they do is, you know, if it needs to have ground fighting, it needs to have stand-up fighting, it's probably going to have Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, it's probably going to have some sort of Muay Thai, you know, it's stuff that it has to have. And, you know, that they were talking about, this article that I was reading was saying, like, there are people now who don't know who the Gracies are that are in UFC or you know, in that sort of line, because it has moved away from that, kind of, sort of, and so it's moved away from its traditional roots. And I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it.
Wow, it's hard to believe that somebody practicing a mixed martial art today or competing in UFC would not know who the Gracies were.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I also think that you can kind of look at Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and it had, you know, it exploded. It's kind of on the wane now a little bit because it was the thing, and I think people had kind of moved away from ground fighting, except other jiu-jitsu guys and judo guys, you know. But one of the things that I think happened, now that it's waning, is people are, you know, kind of looking at it as, well, you know, they wear gis, they wear belts, they're traditional martial art. And really they are. They're just an offshoot of Japanese jiu-jitsu. You know, it's their own little blend.
That's true. And I would, okay, your comment on that Bushido threat, okay, the guy got flamed for making that statement, you know, that it's become, that the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is now, you know, more a traditional art. He got flamed because people resent their art being called traditional. And why should that be so? You know, I mean, what is the rap against, you know, traditional martial artists? Are we the geeks of the martial art world now? You know, are we the ones with the pocket protectors and the tape on our glasses now? I mean, what's this all about? What do you think is behind this this view of traditional martial arts?
Well, I may be biased because I some people fall into the art. You know, they just find a school near their house or whatever, and that's what they study. I actively searched out a traditional martial arts school because I wanted the lineage. And in my experience, people that take traditional martial arts as opposed to some of the MMAs, they do it partly for the lineage, and they want to know a little bit more about the history of their art. A lot of the people that take the mixed martial arts so that they can be in the tournaments, they also wrestled in high school. I mean, their focus is on the physical part of it, not just the physical part, not so much the mental part of karate or the history of it or of any martial art.
Well, I, the way I look at it, Gene, is I think that traditional martial arts get such a rap because I've really noticed it more, you know, of course, living in America, I probably would notice it more in America, but I noticed it really came about with that because I think, you know, definitely as an American culture, but probably just as a modern culture, you know, people don't want to take the time. Any given martial art will probably have everything you need or want, but I don't think people really want to take the time to work through it. People don't want to take the time to learn the kata. People don't want to take the time to learn the drills. People don't want to take I've got to bow in, I've got to bow out, I've got to do all this, I've got to do all that. And I think it started moving from, like, you know, Bruce Lee, who didn't do any of that, you know, and didn't wear uniforms and didn't do, you know, and he was just like, let's just train, which is all well and good, but I think people also look to traditional martial arts for the tradition of it, you know, the process of it. I like going to the dojo. I like putting my gi and my belt on. I like bowing in. I like, you know, going. I like the formalities of it. And if you don't work out in your school, you know, or you work out, you're not getting what you want to get, I think it's being, you know, people are being impatient. I think that, you know, they want it now. You know, they want their Starbucks copy now. You know, so, and TMA is not Starbucks. You know, you gotta brew the stuff. You know, they don't want all that part. They just want the meat. They just want to throw the people on the ground and sweat.
So to put it in traditional martial artist terminology, people today want a bujitsu system, which trains them exclusively for combat. Okay, as opposed to a budo system, which trains them not just for combat but in character development as well. I mean, Americans especially, Paul, and I agree with you completely. Americans, and maybe people in Western society in general, what do their character need to be developed for? They're fine the way they are. Just show me how to defend myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that sound, you know, like where we're going here with this?
Yeah. Because I can see that.
Because to me, I'm with you guys. I want to learn to be able to defend myself as best as I can. But God knows, you know, I could use some character development and training hard, you know, and going through the little rituals that we have and learning respect for other people. I think that all goes towards making you a better person, not just a better fighter, you know, which is important, but even more important is becoming a better person. And I think that's the Budo way. There's nothing wrong with Bujitsu. You know, nothing wrong with that way at all. I mean, that's why a lot of us signed up, you know, to take a martial art. It was to learn how to defend ourselves. But I think that, you know, there are some people that really want that and more. And in order to get the more part of it, you have to subscribe to the traditional Oriental, way of doing things in and out of the dojo.
Let me ask you this, as a little side note. Would you, I think you were saying that patience may be one of the things that you learn from Budo as opposed to Bujitsu. And would you
say... Yeah, that's what Paul was saying, absolutely.
Yeah, and would you say that patience helps you in an altercation? I'm not talking about if you're in a physical confrontation with somebody. Just if somebody is, say, invading your space or giving you some verbal sparring, we'll say... Wouldn't you say patience is a virtue in that too? Wouldn't you say patience is useful in that situation?
Oh, definitely. And when you're sparring, you know, when you're standing up to somebody, you know, you have to make the decision, which, you know, again, I think a lot of these reality-based self-defense places and, you know, mixed martial arts places, and that's, I've talked about this before, that they don't touch on, they don't, you know, they're all about the altercation. They're not about the ramp up to it. You know, they'll talk about, oh, you're doing the interview, and, you know, you're checking the body positioning, and you're da-da-da-da-da, but they're not talking about everything that leads up to that, which is, you know, just the presence of mind not to be somewhere, or, you know, it seems to me that there's a lot of styles that are all about the fight. You know, when I teach people, I tell them, I say, I'm not going to teach you how to fight. I'm going to teach you how to defend yourself. I'm going to teach you how to avoid the situation, and I'm going to teach you martial art. You know, you'll be able to defend yourself as you walk down this path, but you're not going to go from zero to fight, which, because I think all part of that is the, you know, responsibility to the dojo, the responsibility to your fellow students, the responsibility to your instructor, you know, and that's the character building part that keeps you, you know, kind of in check at that moment of when someone's in your face from just swinging, or, you know, you putting an armbar on somebody, you know, how far do I take this armbar? Do I snap it? You know, do I just hyperextend it? Do I take him to the ground? You know, that moment of, let me think about this for a second, is ingrained in you through traditional martial arts, which I don't think you get in, you know, a less traditional venue.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And getting to the another perspective on the patience factor, if you will. The core of every, or most every traditional martial art is kata, you know? And Americans just don't seem to want to take the time, you know, and be patient to learn and perfect a kata. And many modern martial artists, you know, will say, well, you know, kata, what's it? It's dancing. What does that do for you? Somebody attacks you, what are you going to do? You're going to do a kata on them or something? You know? And people, for the record, people that say that really don't know what they're talking about as far as kata goes. They just don't have the patience, you know, and the perseverance to study it. And because that's what you do with kata. You don't just, you know, go through, but you have to do it. You do kata with very, you know, with the utmost seriousness when you practice it, if you're doing it right. And you look deeper into the kata, and, you know, it everything you need to know to defend yourself, in my opinion, is right in kata. And people don't have the patience to want to do that.
Well, I think it's a couple, I agree. And I think my theory is, you know, that back in the 50s and 60s when Americans first started learning martial arts, well, to give you an example, I guess, to preface that, is my instructor went to Okinawa last year, and he said he was amazed. He said, because they've got, you know, the Okinawan, the local Okinawan children are in there, and their kata is razor sharp, and they're like 6, and they're 5, and they're, you know, 8. And they'll do a kata, you know, 20 times. And their instructor will say, go in the corner and do your kata. And they'll do the same kata, like, forever, until someone tells them to go on to the next kata. You know, our children, students here, it's like, you know, you get to do it more than 3 times, they're like, ah, man, am I going to do this again? And it's, they don't want to take that time to learn that kata. And one of the things that I think happened was, you know, all the old Okinawan masters, and probably any other one that you can think of too, you know, they would have maybe 3 or 4 kata in their system. And you would learn, you know, what was it? I was like 1 kata 3 years, I think, was what I heard someone say. You know, or they say they, you know, like Master Soken, they said he practiced the basics for 10 years before, you know, his instructor said, okay, now you learn real karate. And no one wants to do that, you know. And so I think at some point, like, you know, the GIs and whoever was learning the kata, you know, once they kind of got good at it, they wanted more. And, you know, so now we have systems with like 30 kata in it, you know. and so you learn 1 kata, and like, you know, 3 months later you're learning another one, and you can't get to the bunkai, you can't get to the heart of that kata. And so I think that's part of it, is now people are kind of overwhelmed, and they expect to learn X amount of kata, but they don't want to learn them. They just want to, you know, get them, get tested, and move on.
But do you think they don't bother looking inside the... I mean, for me, it wasn't until I got my black belt that I went back. I even went back to the basics, our kihones, and looked through them. I mean, even as basic as that. Do you think a lot of people just don't want to look inside the kata and see what's really there?
Well, yeah, I think... well, you know, they say when you get your shodan, you're a serious student. That's when I started looking at stuff. I think maybe people are just trying to, you know, at some point, just trying to test, you know. They're kind of interested in it. They want to learn it, but, you know, they've got this next test coming up.
So they're training for the test.
Yeah, you know, and they're going to look good for the test, but then, you know, Gene, like you were talking about, telling your story about, you know, having to come up with a different bunkai set for Paisai Sho. Yeah, that needs to be done. It needs to be look into this kata. What is it? But I don't think that really happens until you're above Shodan level.
Now, okay, but what you're talking about happens in good traditional schools. and we're all from, you know, good traditional schools. Our instructors are good quality, you know, instructors, and they understand they understand bunkai from kata, and like I like to say, there are different levels to bunkai and kata. You know, there's the surface level that you see the punch, kick, and whatever, you know. And then there's a deeper level, which, you know, that punch may not be a punch, but it might be a throw. And then a deeper level still where it might be not only be a throw, but it might be a joint lock. But nevertheless, I'm digressing here. I think that a lot of that is lost. I shouldn't say a lot of it. I think it's lost in many schools that claim to be traditional martial arts schools, where you have shodans and nidans breaking off and opening their own school with no, like Pete was saying, lineage, you know, or maybe they're not meeting with their instructors, or maybe even their instructors don't know. And so you got people doing these beautiful kata, and you ask them what they're doing, and they don't know, you know. And the uninformed martial artist or the uninformed, you know, a member of the public will see that, you know, and they'll go, well, geez, you know, they're just dancing. You know, they don't know what they're doing. You know, like, well, what is these? They can't even tell you what these moves mean, you know, other than, you know, the surface level bunkai, if you will. You know, yeah. It takes a really good instructor to take a student through a kata and show them what the bunkai is, for what a bunkai is for that kata. And then you get good at self-defense by practicing not just the kata, but by practicing the bunkai as well, in my opinion.
You know, well, what go ahead.
Just to kind of summarize what I was saying, I think that there are traditional schools who don't do bunkai, and that casts traditional martial artists in a bad light.
I agree. I think that that going with that is people, you know, can't take that time to learn the kata. They can't, you know, there's too much. You know, at some point, someone said, well, we need some more kata to kind of throw at these guys. You know, it used to be, you know, you wore your white belt till you got your black belt. You know,
yeah.
But now it's like every Q level has at least one kata, you know. And so people, I think, at some level, don't take the time to learn the kata, because they, you know, they in their minds they think they can't. Whereas, you know, it's like if you just know, you know, if you, the instructor, it's kind, I guess it's maybe kind of on the instructor level of letting people work their kata. Say, okay, you know, you the Pinan Shodan, that's your kata. You know, but I think now maybe there's enough. Well, you know, there's large associations where, you know, they have their, you know, their set curriculum. Whereas before, there was, I think there are a lot of people that are senior karateka now, you know, seventh dons and eighth dons and ninth, you know, that maybe they learned, that's the way they learned, was like, you know, you do your kata. And then, you know, a year or two later, we'll teach you another one. You know, that kind of thing. And now they're part of an association where they've got so many more people, and they've got a kind of, you know, they wanted to formalize it a little bit, and they pulled some kata in from other, you know, branches. And so it's kind of homogenized the styles a little bit, which I think is part of the whole, you know, like, oh, that's not, that you're not doing that kata right because we do it. Well, yeah, maybe they pulled it over from another style. I just don't think that there's a lot of opportunities to really get into the kata and glean what you need out of it to make it effective these days. And I think that's why there's a lot of people going with mixed martial arts and eclectic styles like that, because they're going the other way. There's too much stuff, so they want to kind of focus on some things. But there's a happy medium in there that they're missing.
Well, that's a really good point, Paul. I mean, you take a student, a prospective student, who's looking at a traditional martial arts school, maybe to go there, and they look at the curriculum, and they look at, what, maybe 15 kata, maybe 20 kata, maybe more, you know, for black belt. You know, I mean, the prospect of learning all of those is overwhelming, you know? So I agree. It's not quantity, but quality. I mean, better to know, you know, three or four katas inside out, upside down, you know, thoroughly, the bunkai, everything, you know, for those three or four, than to know 20 kata and not many of them meet.
Pete?
Yeah. Sorry, I was concentrating here. I'm thinking of other things on the computer. As far as kata goes, when I started, like I said, I purposely sought out a traditional school, but I never thought my instructor was ever going to give me more than I needed to, than I could handle. I never paid attention to how many kata there were. I figured I could handle whatever the instructor thought I could handle. So I never paid attention. If he told me I had to learn a kata, had to learn a kata. I didn't think, well, I've got to learn this many. And I, by the same token, I didn't think, well, he's got to give me more kata. If I only had one kata in a year, that was fine, because that's what the instructor wanted me to do.
You know, that just popped in my head. You know, you notice a lot of people I've noticed a majority of people who have started their own style, you know, or have gone off and, you know, founded another style or whatever, are guys who... quite a few of them are like, you know, they're third, they're fourth, they're fifth degrees. And I'm kind of wondering if maybe my little lazy American theory applies to that as well, because I know in our style, you know, as you move up in the black belt ranks, the number of kata really drops off. You know, you may look like, and also the rate that in which you test. So, you know, I wonder if maybe a lot of these styles are getting founded because guys are, you know, they're getting bored and they don't want to wait around. And they get to the third or fourth degree, and they say, well, I'm not going to test for another 4 or 5 years, and I'm only learning one kata, and they don't think they're learning anymore. So then they go study another style, or they go and they cross-train some other style, and they open up a dojo, you know, Hu Flung Dung Ru, you know?
See, I always thought of it as they just figured they were never going to get any higher. I mean, there's only so many...
I've heard those stories too, you know?
Some people would rather be the big fish in a small pond than a medium-sized fish in a larger pond.
By the way, Hu Flung Dung Ru is a modern art that was created during a Republican National Convention somewhere. Whoops! Oh my God! I didn't say that, did I?
Okay, no politics. Remember, no politics.
Sorry.
And I also think that's, speaking of politics, that is one of the things that's kind of getting traditional martial arts a bad rap, because, you know, the associations get to a certain size and they kind of seem to employ it a little bit. Or, you know, there are people who, you know, get disgruntled and they leave the association. I mean, we've had it in our association. People who have, you know, gotten upset and left the style. There have been people who have been kicked out of the style, you know, kicked out of the association. And they've gone and started their own association and said, you know, they're not doing it right, I'm doing it right, you know, and they'll try and take students away, or, you know, they'll just start another style, and they don't, you know, they don't mention who their instructor is. They just say that they're a, you know, a fifth degree black belt in whatever, and then, you know, a year later, they're suddenly a silky.
Yeah. Well, we've had that happen just within our dojo, and, one of the senior instructors went off and started. Well, yeah, they started their own dojo, but they went with another traditional style that's similar to ours. But they also tried to take students. And you know, the politics. I love politics. I love to follow politics. But the for me, martial arts and politics doesn't combine. You should just be doing your art and, you know, following the tradition, and that's about it.
I'm afraid that any time humans are involved, politics will also be involved. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, human beings are not infallible, you know, and there's always going to be some kind of a political thing. I mean, look at any association, whether it's here or Okinawa or anywhere in the world, and there's politics. You know, the two head guys are in some kind of disagreement, and each has their own camps, and, you know, each camp insists that their instructor is correct, and it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the martial arts or anything else. So it just comes with the territory, you know, just part of being human.
Yeah, you know, I think it comes up with that whole thing of egos of, you know, when you get an association, like when I first started in our association, we only had maybe two or three guys in America who were above Yandan, you know, and now we've got, you know, 3, 4, 7th degrees, maybe 5, 7th degrees, we've got a bunch of sixes, a bunch of fifths, we've got a bunch of senior guys, and then in Okinawa, you know, we've got a bunch of guys who've been over there, you know, people who were in the military and they spent like their whole career over there, and, you know, they're civilian workers who've been over there forever. And it seems like, I mean, you know, yeah, I love my association, so it seems with now we've kind of gotten to a nice homeostasis where people know that, you know, there's a guy who's the head of the style. He said that this guy's taken over after me, and everyone's kind of happy with it. You know, there aren't any, you know, but I think there's a point in some styles where maybe there are not quite as a clear lineage or a clean chain of command where, you know, stuff starts shaking loose. You know, somebody else wants to teach it a different way. People want to, you know, and they feel they have to break away. Where I don't think people have to break away from a traditional style if they want to emphasize some part of the style over, which is, you know, something we talked about in a previous cast. I don't think people need to abandon everything they've ever done in order to emphasize some other little part. You know, I think they can stay traditional, keep their kata, you know, they can just emphasize within the instruction, you know, it's this, you know, look at this more than this, that kind of thing, which I think is just where, I think that's the evolution of martial arts, and I think that it evolved from the first guy who swung a punch at somebody. You know, and then, you know, all our great grandmasters, Master Soken, you know, Bushi Matsumura, you know, Bodhidharma, all those guys, at some point, took what they learned and advanced it a little. And, you know, but now it's getting to the point where anybody can do a martial art, and they are.
Exactly. Whenever people talk about the martial arts and the founders of the individual arts, it seems to me a lot of people talk about them like, whatever they said or did was written in stone. And I just can't see people 100, 200, 300 years ago saying, well, no, you can't do it another way because this is the way I've always done it. They would take things, if they saw something done a little bit differently that maybe fit them better, they would take it. And that's part
okay.
of the... Pardon?
Okay, but if I could just interject something here. Now, in the traditional martial arts, we're told that you can add stuff to your style, to your system, but there's some things that you just can't change. For example, kata. You know, that you're not supposed to change anything in kata. Is that right? I mean, have you guys heard that before?
Well, I have, yeah.
Well, no. Because I know that, you know, Master Soken used to teach people, and I know that Kisei Hanshi teaches people. He's like, well, you know, he changes it for your body a little bit. I mean, you know, kata has bunkai in it, so, I mean, you know, if you look at it, you know, instead of, and also if you look at, you know, I worked out 2 weeks ago with a guy who studies Shonryu, but under Tadashi Yamashita, under his lineage, and, you know, we had the same kata, but they had a lot more stances, and they had some extra punches and kicks in there, and some places they had a few different techniques within the same kata. So somebody somewhere decided to emphasize something else in that kata.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it wrong, and it doesn't make mine wrong. And whether or not I agree with the flow of that kata the way it is, that kata has been changed, but it hasn't been fundamentally changed.
But what you said...
Go ahead, Pete.
What you said, Paul, is part of the maturity of the art and how it's supposed to, how the respect that it's supposed to be within the art is there. What neither one of you were wrong. There's no wrong way. You know, I can see, like I said, picturing back several generations, I can see there being rivalries between different masters, but I can't. I can also see them saying, well, he's doing it differently. It may or may not be wrong, but it's right for him, obviously. You know?
Well, you guys make a good point, and I am wrong about that. I mean, Chibana, legend has it, Chibana did not teach Gojishio. Okay?
Yeah.
He told his students, you want to learn Gojishio? Go out and learn Gojishio. Now we've got all kinds of different Gojishios out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because everyone learned from a different instructor.
Yeah. Yeah, art is one, and one is no better than the other. I mean, when we were with Shorinru Shidokan, the Gojishiho we learned in that style was much different than the Gojishiho we now practice in Shorinkan. Much different. You know, I mean, there are some similarities to be sure, but, you know, one is not necessarily better than the other. You know,
yeah, we have, like, you know, we have guys who studied with Master Soken, you know, like back in Okinawa, and that's the only guy they studied with, and they left and they came to America. Well, you know, some of his senior students, who train under Master Soken, do their kata slightly different than the way we do in Kenshin Kan. And I've seen, you know, another association, another Matsumura Daigo Association, and I've seen their kata, and I'm like, not that much of a change. You know, it was just emphasizing a few things. Maybe the, you know, you put maybe a foot sweep here when it was just a step there, but it wasn't an essentially big change. But there are people who feel it like, well, they've got to, you know, change branches. They've got to change styles. They've got to, you know, start their own style. They've got, and you know, I think back in the day, that didn't happen quite so much, simply due to the fact that there was more loyalty to instructors, there's more loyalty to a dojo, and there were fewer students. Yeah, you know, an instructor may have, you know, three or four students, so it's easier to kind of keep it, you know, tight. And then, you know, as the number expands, you know, you have four students, they all four become instructors, they have four students, they have four, you know, then it's going to start to, I guess, stray from the path, but I don't think it's really going to stray that much.
But you know, the thing is, it's different at that level, but the more basic you get down to your art, I think, for example, if all three of us were to be in the same room, our stances would probably be very, very similar. The only difference is being what we modify for our body weight or for whatever, or for, well, in my case, for a small disability. But the basics are pretty much standard through all the TMA.
Yeah, for the most part, a front punch is a front punch, you know. Outside block.
That's why, you know, the guys that, you know, feel they have to start found a new style, you know, they say it's a new system. It's not new. It's, you know, it hasn't changed in however long, how many hundreds of years. It's just how they approach it or how they want to come at it, you know, how. Do they want to teach, you know, punches first? Do they want to teach blocks first? Do they want to teach, you know, kicks first? Do they want to, you know, how do they want to do their style? But it's, someone has already done that. Somebody somewhere down the road in the past has, I'm certain, researched anything that anyone has ever done in the martial arts to this point. Someone has done it. And either done it and discarded it or has changed it to something else. But, you know, you've got these guys who, you know, for some reason want to do their own thing, and they're acting like they just reinvented the wheel when they didn't. They had a perfectly good wheel to begin with.
Yeah, I thought I read somewhere that Shaolin temples had their own research and development departments where, you know, they lost a lot of monks that way. You know, but it's sacrilege.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be talking like
that. Well, the only caveat to that I have is that there is, in the big city near us, there is one martial arts school that uses the mini exercise trampolines, and I don't think they had those at the monasteries.
Well, yeah, they had they would take like a deer skin, and then they would, you know, they would stretch it really tight. And
yeah, I suppose.
Well, they didn't need to. Have you ever watched a kung fu movie? They just fly through the air.
True.
Shaolin monks.
Okay, it looks like the quality of this conversation is deteriorating quite rapidly, guys. Maybe we ought to just put this one to bed pretty quick here.
I was thinking that. Why don't we go on to, do we have anybody got emails that we received? Or?
Oh, funny you should mention that, Pete. Yeah, as you know, we've been giving our email address after every podcast, which is, what's that email address, Pete?
KarateCafe@gmail.com.
And we've been getting really a lot of emails. We're kind of surprised. I mean, at first we didn't get many, but then, you know, as we've been persevering here, and especially since Paul has come on board, we've been getting an awful lot of emails, and we thank you for that.
It's get off.
No, actually. They've been both. There's been positive and negative, so I figured I'd, you know, in the interest of fairness, because we are a fair and balanced podcast here, I thought I'd take a couple and just read them for our audience here. Okay, you want to hear a couple?
Sure.
You bet.
Okay. Okay, good. This one is from TKD Chick. I assume that's Taekwondo Chick. Okay, she says, just listened to episode number 16 about teaching the martial arts, and I couldn't agree more. So many brown belts or even new black belts just have a class turned over to them and are expected to teach like they've been doing it, teaching for years. Just like Pete said, I've also had several instructors who have just handed the class over to a lower belt to teach with disastrous results. Your ideas about an annual recertification in order to teach is great. I'm going to ask my sensei to listen to the podcast so we can incorporate that idea. Thanks and keep up the great podcasts. That's from Taekwondo Chick.
Oh, so excellent.
People are archiving our episodes. That was about episode 16.
Yeah, good. That's the good.
Yeah. This one's mine. Somebody's pissed at me. It's from Christopher Lee. Not the famous actor. This last one is L.I.
Ah.
And Christopher says, in episode 22, Gene said that Go Shinjutsu is a Shotokan, quote, knockoff. Uh-oh.
Did you know?
What's that?
Did you really?
I did. I honestly did. Well, he says, for your information, it is not a Shotokan knockoff. Goshin, meaning protection of the body, and Jutsu, meaning techniques, is a modern, eclectic style of self-defense. It has its roots in a variety of arts, including jiu-jitsu, aikido, judo, Shotokan karate, Western boxing, wrestling, and several others. I resent your use of the word knockoff. It is demeaning, and you really should know what you're talking about before you say something stupid. The stupid was preceded by an expletive. You know, I kind of deserve that. I need to do my research.
So you need to knock it off.
Ba-dum-bum. So Gene, are you saying that you're taking responsibility for a misstatement that you may have made?
Yes. Like any good liberal, I will do that.
Well, I mean, are you being a humble example of a traditional martial artist?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact. Well, thank you. What a great summary.
See, there you go. Well, because I've listened to other podcasts where they don't really mention that they may have misspoke. So,
really?
Not that I'm running down any other podcasts, because I am a humble martial artist.
They're living in the now.
I guess so. My point is...
Well, you know, guys, I mean, like we say, you know, we are really the Internet's first martial arts podcast. And, you know, folks won't find us to be arrogant or blustering here, that, you know, we're just humble martial artists like our listeners who like to discuss a variety of topics that, you know, real practitioners can relate to. And unlike some of these other podcasts, we promise we won't pull rank. will we?
No.
I don't have any rank to pull. I'm a really small fish in this pond.
Yeah.
Hey, do we have any more emails?
We do, but those are the only two I culled from my collection here. Okay. Maybe we can do some more next week.
Yeah, it's good that people are referencing the older podcasts, because also referencing stuff that's new on the board, like that thing about the black belt recertification. I thought that was a pretty interesting thread, because I agree with parts of it and I don't agree with parts of it, and it's a good you know, it's a good topic, I guess, probably for us to research and maybe bring on the board or on the podcast at some other point. And we could have your instructor come on and talk about that.
And where is the boards, Paul?
The board would be at karatecafe.com/forums.
Very good.
And you can put www on there if you would like, but
not necessary these days.
Not necessary these days. Or as they say down in Texas, www.
Pete and Paul are Karate Cafe's answer to the Geek Squad, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't even have my tie on.
That's okay. I am actually wearing my badge, though. My badge of shame.
Shall we call it a wrap here?
Yeah, I think that's about it. Well, we've got more to talk about on traditional martial arts versus other. I mean, that's going to be coming up in the coming weeks.
And we would like to hear you, yes, you, the listener. Or
yeah,
at least so read you.
Yeah.
So if you've got some thoughts you want to agree, you want to disagree, or tell us what you think about the podcast or the website, please email us at karatecafe@gmail.com or post on our forums at www.karatecafe.com/forums. Anything else, Peter Paul?
I do have one announcement. Gene and I are going to a camp in a couple of weeks, and we're going to have some Kyoshis and some upper ranks there. And so much like Ask a Ninja, if anybody has a question for a Kyoshi, you can ask a Kyoshi, and we'll try to see if we can get him to – we'll bring down the equipment and see if we can get him to answer some questions if you have any.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Except for I don't think he'll wear the ninja uniform when he answers the Ask a Kyoshi questions.
When is that camp? I mean, I read it, but I spaced it because it's, you know.
It's Saturday the 21st or Saturday the 22nd of July.
You guys been working out really hard preparing for it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it always seems that way. You're always like really, you ramp up to a camp, and then somewhere like a month or so before, something gets in the way, and then you're like, oh, man.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting. Usually we have like a 3-day camp, but this year, because of extenuating circumstances, it's going to be an abbreviated camp, but I have a feeling like Yoshi Hurton is going to compress 3 days of training into one Saturday afternoon.
Yes, after reading the post on the board, it sounds like it's going to be a really good camp. It's going to be a really good, not just an instructor's camp, but if that's your bend, I think it's going to be help anybody that teaches.
Yeah, it'll be good.
And okay. Sorry, I just want to throw it out because, you know, since we're talking about camps, we also have a camp for Kenshin Khan, and I think it's September. It's going to be in up in Minnesota, and Master Kisei will be there. Kisei Hanshi and his son, Isao Kisei, will also be there. And it's, you know, I can't find that date.
You said it's in September.
I threw it out there, and there. Oh, here it is. It is going to be. When is it going to be? I just lost. Okay, there's Camp Flyer right there. Isn't this smooth?
Yeah.
I just thought about throwing it in.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll post it somewhere. Talk to you guys about it next week because it's not going to be until towards September because, you know, they only get so much weather in Minnesota.
Well, we've got a lot of people in the I guess I'd still consider the Midwest that listen to the podcast. So you know, we'll bring that up.
Actually, no, I got it right now.
Okay.
As soon as my computer shows up. September 8th through the 10th in 2006 in Atwater, Minnesota. So it'll be Master Kisei and his son, Isao Kisei, and there will be much fun by all. There'll be a Kabuto, there'll be Tuate, there's going to be testing. It's generally, all our camps are generally open to other styles to come and, you know, want to see a real looking at one master workout.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great opportunity.
Definitely, definitely. So if you do have any questions about that camp or our camp, you can email us at karatecafe@gmail.com, and we'll forward the comments or questions to people that know more.
Which won't be hard. But...
All right, so I guess that does it for episode 29 of Karate Cafe's podcast. Tune in again next week. We'll have some more discussion about the traditional martial arts and what's the rap on TMA and anything else we darn well want to talk about. So until that time, I'm Gene Myers.
Pete Shambo.
And Paul Wilson.
Thanks for listening, and from a remote, undisclosed location, good night.